Hello, Katie. I have a very British problem.
Did you run out of tea? What's going on?
Worse even than that, which is that I live opposite a church.
Of course
and
you
Monday
do.
Night, because I'm extremely religious, Monday night is bell ringing night. So you might hear a few peals. I don't know what they call them. I'm trying to think. The nine tailors, that's a type of bell ringing. Yes. And I apologize in advance. It's going to be a bit weird, but you have to bear with it.
So bell ringing night, is this a religious ceremony or is this just for funsies?
Well, I think a little bit. I think this is how, you know, people in Britain meet people that they might go on to marry and be unhappy with for many decades through bell ringing. Yeah.
This is the equivalent of British Tender.
Ringer, yes, with no E, just to make it look internet-y.
Okay, well, welcome to Blocked and Reported. I'm Katie Herzog, and joining me today, while my usual place filler Jesse Single is very politely asking the pigeons perched on his windowsill to observe quiet hours, you already know we have fan favorite Helen Lewis. Helen Lewis is not a bell ringer. She is, however, a staff writer at The Atlantic and the author of Difficult Women, A History of Feminism and 11 Fights. And according to the truly dog shit resource Transgender Map, she is a sex segregationist. Helen, I didn't know that about you. Do you make your husband pee outside?
In a manner of speaking, yes. we got this really bizarre house. It's like a very small house that's got the living room upstairs, which is lovely, but the bedrooms are downstairs. And bizarrely, it's got three toilets in it. And I don't entirely understand why. So it's got one family bathroom, one ensuite bathroom. And then under the stairs, it has what I call Harry Potter's cupboard, which is where the washing machine is. And it also has got a toilet in it. So we do now observe sex segregated toilets in this household. In this house, we shit in different places.
So Andrea James was actually right about something for once. I'm shocked.
By accident. Yes, she somehow got it. Do you know, the funny thing is that I'm applying for a visa to go and hopefully come over to America a bit more in the future. And one of the things
you're joining us.
Yeah. One of the things you have to prove is that you're like internationally renowned. And my husband said, you could send them your GLAD page. Look, I'm influenced in America.
That is a fantastic idea.
It's me and Rush Limbaugh together, the bigots.
Yeah, just hope that the bureaucrats checking your visa are in fact TERFs. Which, you know what? Not unlikely.
Well, if I hang on until, you know, if I hang on until November and it's Trump-based bureaucrats, then they'll take one look at that and I'll be straight through.
Yeah. Do you know where you would be? Or you just want to come hang out in our country for no reason? Or is there a particular location?
Just so that I can do...
Florida.
Yeah, just
it's
so
Florida.
That I can do more... Oh, I love Florida. miss Florida so much. No, just so that I can be over there more often, really. And not have to kind of come back in between.
Well, I hope it works out.
I do too.
I'll let you stay at one of my homes.
I would like to stress that I'm terrible at DIY. The other thing you should know about my house, apart from the fact it has three toilets, is that we moved in 2015 and it was a new build. And I bought the show furniture that it came with and we've had it since.
Wow, you can do that. I didn't know that was a possibility.
I am a slattern. It's disgusting. I just don't care enough. I just don't care.
Okay, Helen. Well, today we have a lot on the docket. First, you are going to bring me the most important news from Turf Island. And then I'm going to tell you about a YouTube plagiarism scandal that has spiraled into something much darker. If I had creepy music here, this is where I would insert it. But before we get to that, I'm trying to get some feedback from our paying subscribers. And since you are, in fact, a paying subscriber, you do not have a free subscription. How are you enjoying these Jesse-less episodes? I mean, is it time? Should we fire him? What do you think?
Do you know what? I felt sad for Jesse today because I read Andrea Long Chu's very long Chu piece
very
about how all children should be allowed to transition and do whatever they want. And there was a whole paragraph. I only got a brief glancing mention, but Jesse got a whole paragraph. And I think that the fact that he's annoyed her sufficiently to merit an entire paragraph in her 90,000 word piece entirely justifies his inclusion on this podcast.
My takeaway from that article, I did not read the entire 90,000 words. I did probably read half of them. My takeaway from it, though, is that Andrea Long Chu would make a very cool babysitter. Not from the adult perspective, but she would be the whole thing was about... And I think she deserves some credit for this, was about how a diagnosis of gender dysphoria is sort of a misplaced requirement for youth transition, and kids should be able to transition because kids own their bodies and freedom. She is the consummate libertarian. I honestly think that she should move to New Hampshire and become friends with Carlin Borisenko and join the Free State Project. It was an incredibly libertarian piece.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why it's any more outrageous to think that you wouldn't let a, you know, 12-year-old own an AK-47 or an AR-15 than it is to, you know, have life-changing
Actually, in
surgery.
America, we have no problem with that.
Right, exactly. And it's nice. She should move to Florida, where such things are encouraged. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting. Someone British asked me what I thought of it, and I said it reminded me a lot of the arguments for Brexit. So there was a big caucus of Brexiteers, right, who were libertarians. And what they basically wanted from Brexit was to turn us into kind of Singapore on Thames. So that is a low tax, low regulation state where basically, you know, you can get
pro-caning.
Right, pro-caning. You can get fired, you know, at will, like a kind of much more American approach to employment rights than a European one. But they correctly intuited that this would be wildly unpopular, and people like things like, once you've given people sick pay, holiday pay, the ability not to get fired, they tend to really, really like it. So instead, the Brexit argument was much more founded on immigration and controlling borders. And this is a sort of similar thing, right? There is a very logical libertarian argument for letting people transition. It's just, it's wildly unpopular. And the reason that born this way and this is a, you know, you have to do this or your kid will kill themselves have gained so much traction is they fundamentally appeal to way more people than they do. Like, let the kids have a tattoo, let them cut bits of themselves off. All of this is very cool.
But she doesn't seem to grapple with the fact that children are fundamentally different than adults. Children are stupid. Some adults are stupid, but children are very stupid.
That's when you're only saying that because you're a tall.
Which is a trans,
trans apathetic reactionary liberal, I think.
Yes.
You know, I remember how encouraging it was when people tried to make fart happen, which was like a feminist appropriating radical transphobe. And everyone's like, wow, that's a really embarrassing acronym.
At least it's a
word. Turns out these, yeah, it turns out it's really hard. These just, you know, organically generate because they're good and you can't kind of force it.
Right.
No, Pulitzer winning Andrea Longchi will have none of this idea of word creation. She's coming in hot with Tal.
I do. The thing I do appreciate about her is that I'm blocked by trans Twitter, so I don't know what the reaction has been on trans Twitter, but I'm guessing it hasn't been great because she has a tendency to write about the reality of transition, which is that transition isn't necessarily going to make you happy. She wrote that about her own. She bought a vagina at some point, and she wrote about it in the New York Times and said, you know, I don't think my vagina is going to actually make me happy. And so I think her willingness to write this thing that is almost guaranteed to piss off everybody. It's, you know what? She might not have balls, but she's got balls.
Right. Actually, Jesse asked me what I thought the reaction to the piece would be. And I said, I think it would just be massively ignored. In the same way, if you remember when New York Magazine had that trans man who'd had that freakishly large penis made. And I'm not saying
that. But he also kept his vagina.
And I'm not saying that's rude. Like, literally in the piece he writes, I wanted the biggest one they would give me.
Right. Give me the magnum.
Yeah. And it was just the picture of him was quite intense in terms of the scarring and the kind of sheer amount of surgery. And so there was this sort of, and there were lots of details in his backstory about having been raped when still living as a woman, and it was just not a kind of lovely butterfly narrative, and so everyone just said nothing. It was like it had never happened.
Oh, we did like 4 episodes on it just on the size of the package alone.
Right, but in the trans activist community there wasn't this kind of yes queen, you know, live your best life. It was just, oh no, this is
right.
Yeah, it was just, this is actually kind of embarrassing and off script, and therefore it's inconvenient, so let's pretend that it didn't happen. And I suspect that'll be the case with this Andrea Longchi piece as well.
Well, thank you to New York Magazine for platforming the most unhinged arguments among the trans community. Appreciate that. All right, should we get to news from Turf Island?
Yeah, I've got 3 bits of news from Turf Island for you, and I'll do them really quickly. The first is J.K. Rowling's been fighting on the internet again.
Really?
Yeah. There's a... do you ever watch the old original series of Chappelle Show? And there's a one sketch in which, I can't remember why, it's Chappelle says something about being really petty, and he goes, but luckily for me, my family's petty too. And that's how I think every time I read J.K. Rowling's tweets. It's just like, she's quite spectacularly petty. And, you know... it's working. It's like, she clearly finishes writing like another, yeah, exactly, like another blockbuster novel, and yes. Then just thinks, right, which really minor celebrities am I going to troll on Twitter? So there was a former TV presenter, a trans woman called India Willoughby, And they, I can't remember what the argument started, but essentially she said that, you know, Indy Willoughby is referred to as he and as a man. Mm-hmm. And Willoughby said, this is a hate crime. I'm going to report it to the police. And unfortunately, even under our slightly draconian hate speech laws, that isn't really going to get anywhere. But this young kid from an outfit called Byline Times that you probably haven't heard of. It's not very well known. It was described by Willard Fox, who's a podcast producer, as Waitrose InfoWars, which I guess translated into American is like Whole Foods InfoWars.
Whole Foods, yeah. InfoWars is actually Whole Foods.
Right, okay. But this kid called Kaylin Robertson interviewed Wendy Willoughby and then said, you know, and of course I extended the invitation to J.K. Rowling too, but she didn't say yes. And J.K. Rowling then, you know, not possibly gilding the lily, pointed out that she's got one or two things on, actually, mm-hmm. what with the phenomenally successful book series and many executive producer credits that she continues to hold. Yes. And she wasn't, in fact, scared of him. Anyway, at that point, the kid called her a putrid C-word at 1 a.m, which is not classically what I would advise doing when you want to get people to be interviewed by you. But, you know.
Is that a hate crime in the UK?
No, because actually, hilariously, of all the aggravating factors like homophobia, transphobia, whatever, sexism, misogyny isn't one. they I don't know how that happened, but they just didn't put that one in.
Cunt's just such a good word. They couldn't include it.
Yeah. Anyway, the strangely funny thing about this story is that this guy used to be Tommy Robinson. Stephen Yaxley Lennon is his given name, kind of far-right agitator in the sort of Steve Bannon-esque mold. He used to be his cameraman, and there's archive interviews of him talking to Lauren Southern and other alt-right figures about how gay men all have diseases and they're degenerates. And Byline said,
"Is he a gay man?"
He is a gay man, yes.
So he's speaking from experience.
Right, like an average of 500 sexual partners each. And you're like, yes. Okay, I've got a lot on. But Byline say that they de-radicalized him. And it was just the most perfect example of like horseshoe theory. It's like, I like to shout at people and be rude. Right. What is the vector for doing this in my current environment? So yeah, I thought I'd catch up a bit on JK.
Great.
Are you interested in Kate Middleton?
Extremely.
Okay, so she basically went into hospital over Christmas and the palace then said she had to have an operation, she was going to disappear from sight. But this is just, you know, all the people who are making TikToks about the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial?
Uh-huh.
Those people are now making TikToks about what's happened to Kate Middleton.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of tried to do a proof of life photo at the weekend, a Mother's Day photo, and it turned out to have been quite badly photoshopped. So everybody now has got all kinds of theories about what's happened with that. And it's one of those really weird...
Wait, so who released the palace release this photo? Was it like an AI photo?
Well, this was the thing. It was released by Kensington Palace, which is the household of the uh-huh. Prince and Princess of Wales. And it was supposedly taken by William. And all the photo agencies are quite annoyed because this kind of business of handout photos has happened really often. It happened in America too. If you remember, Barack Obama had that guy who took all his photos and all those kind of adorable ones of like the kid touching his hair and, you know, him laughing and looking sort of suave. That was all taken by a guy that basically was, you know, producing propaganda for him. So the news agencies are really pretty annoyed about all this sort of stuff. So they withdrew the photo late on Sunday night and said it's been altered, at which point the kind of basically the sky fell in and it is now open season on kind of like, look, these don't line up. The checks on the dress prove that she's been stuffed. It's extraordinary. It's like the whole country's lost their mind.
Do you have Madame Tussauds in the UK?
I was going to say, I think we invented Madame Tussauds. But
it does not sound like an American name, does it?
She was French originally, I think. Wasn't she? I think she, I have a really weird feeling that she started off during the French Revolution making death masks of people who'd been guillotined. That's how she got a big break. But yes, we do.
Oh, that would make sense. That would make sense. Maybe that's what they use for the photo. Well, what's your theory about where Kate is?
I think she's genuinely got a medical problem and she doesn't fancy explaining it to the rest of us, given that it's not our intestines. and she'll probably kind of resurface again after Easter. But it's just this really bizarre situation in which people just can't cope with not knowing.
Do you think that as... She's not just a normal celebrity, you know, she is an employee of the people, right? I mean, don't you guys pay her bills? Do you think she has some obligation to pop up and say, hey, over here, I'm still alive?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? They do have public duties. But I also think there's a situation where the fact that we turn these things into kind of massive online, you know, MMORPGs. Right. And I described this to a colleague as QAnon for Huns, which I don't think translates into American, but like a Hun in Britain is like a wine mom in America. And it is just basically
like Karens.
But like the kind of benign side of a Karen. really, in the, you know, sort of people who might buy a dry robe and drink Prosecco.
And have like, do you have like live, love, laugh decor in right. your home? No.
Exactly. You know, this house runs on Prosecco. That kind of vibe.
I would guess that Mumps and Ned is probably going wild with this, with the speculation. Is it not?
I mean, if they've taken 5 minutes off off praising Posy Parker, yeah, maybe they have. I'll go and check in. But yeah, essentially it has become a kind of, you know, I was just trying to think when the first one of these I can remember is, and I think it was probably that, do you remember the hunt for the Boston bomber, and Reddit identified some poor student of Indian descent who it turns thrown himself into a river. But it was this sense right. that everybody told themselves what they were doing was vital national security work, and what they were actually doing was playing a kind of giant game of Clue.
Right. I mean, true crime is so popular, I think especially among women, and there is this very dark side of it. Like, as an example, I am Facebook friends with a guy who's, and I don't actually know how I know, but I'm Facebook friends with a guy whose daughter, whose 14-year-old daughter, was murdered. And super tragic. Nobody's been arrested. And he is constantly, he's posting about these battles that he has with these internet sleuths, most of whom are women, who have convinced themselves that he is guilty. And are like actively trying to ruin this man's life. And I joined the Facebook group to see what was going on. And these people are deeply, deeply fucking invested and deeply unhinged. And it seems like it's a hobby. It's a game for them. I'm sure they think that they're doing something very just, but what they're doing is actually hurting someone who's already been extremely harmed.
Anything to do with children attracts that. So there was a case here of Madeleine mm-hmm. McCann, who was a kid who was probably murdered, certainly disappeared from Portugal. And the Portuguese parents slightly put the suspicion on the Portuguese police slightly put the suspicion on the parents, who it turns out have absolutely nothing to do with it. But it was a similar thing of people pouring through the evidence.
Yeah.
And then I guess the case of JonBenet Ramsey, if you remember that, that's one for those elder millennials among us.
If that had happened during the internet era.
Right. It would just, people would have been making enormously complicated diagrams of stuff like yeah. that. And I just think, yeah, you're right. But I guess this is a slightly more harmless version of that, in that she's got a whole protective apparatus around her. But nonetheless, I just imagine that the last right. thing you need when you're laid up with surgery or whatever it might be is kind of having to, she had to issue a press release today saying it was me who ineptly edited the photo. I just went
really?
A bit hog wild.
She said
yeah. like many amateur photographers, I enjoy editing my photos, but I'm not very good at it, basically.
She should have included at least one selfie with that.
Yeah.
one proof of life.
So that's my.
Do you think it's possible that she like wants a divorce, where she's stepping back from the royal family? Are you allowed to get a divorce?
You are allowed to get, many of them have got divorces. You definitely are. I think there is that. I mean, I think if it went on and on for a long time. So I talked in the piece about the fact that there was a sort of dress rehearsal for this with Princess Charlene of Monaco. I don't know why I come on and I'm sorry I talked to you about these things, as if your listeners are interested in Princess Charlene of Monaco. But anyway, she married Albert of Monaco, 2 decades older than her. He'd already got loads of love children already. He used to be a
Prince Albert. Right?
Yeah.
That's where the name comes from?
I don't...
The name of the piercing.
That was allegedly Queen Victoria's husband, but yes. Okay. He's the kind of guy who maybe would have a Prince Albert. His mother was Grace Kelly, who might have looked beautiful in her wedding dress, but was quite the goer in her day.
Really?
So anyway, so she disappeared off to South Africa for 10 months and left him and the kids at home, supposedly having some sort of nose surgery, and then later checked in with exhaustion into a Swiss clinic. So there were similar levels of... you know, kind of prurient interest in it. It's just that Monaco is, it's the size of like an Applebee's car park. So it doesn't really generate the same kind of level of interest as the Windsors.
Well, I'm glad the royal family is keeping you guys busy over there.
Thank you. The last thing I have to do is a visit to Scotland, which is very much our Canada, I think, in terms of its sort of weird progressive outcrops. And there was a story about the fact that Creative Scotland, which is a government state funding agency, had given £85,000 of funding to a project called RAIN. And I would like you, if you can see in the notes, to read out the description of it. RAIN, the work, is a 45-minute film where you could what, Katie? What could you do?
Come see the daddies lurking in the woods, a muddy wrestling come fucking bog, princesses playfully trying to drown each other on a lock, bare arse lovers frolicking in the long grass. I should have done that with my impeccable Scottish accent.
You should have done that in your Scottish. Any one of your many Scottish accents would have done with that. Come see the daddies lurking in the woods. I don't know what Scottish accent that was. I wasn't even doing Sean Connery. But the best thing, the reason I brought this to you is that this is, of course, I know that this just sounds like
I should donate.
Any kind. I know this sounds like perfectly normal bog porn. However, it is, of course, lesbian bog porn.
Yes. Therefore, it should be state funded.
It should be. And I'd like you to also read out the list of the... we're looking for 6 performers to join our company of dykes for a research and development shoot. Please read out the types of dykes that they are looking for.
We are looking for dyke identifying performers, people who have a relationship to the word dyke. We're looking for trans dykes, poly dykes, stud dykes, baby dykes, bi dykes, asexual dykes, fem dykes, elder dykes, envy dykes, fag dykes, stone butch dykes, trans mass dykes, ex dykes, daddies, brats, switchy princesses, bunnies, riggers, soft boys, service stubs, and dykes of all combinations, shapes, sizes, and in between. This is everyone.
I want you to be completely honest with me. How many of those words do you think they just put in for a laugh and they aren't really sexual preferences?
Oh, I think these are all real, except the one that I don't know is...
Riggers?
Rigger. Yeah.
That's white people. It's not even dreadlocks.
I hope you're not kidding about that.
I know. I'll be honest with you. In bunnies, I probably can have... Switchy princesses, I feel like... I don't understand if you don't have a penis, how you can be a switchy princess.
No, switchy princesses, they definitely have dicks.
Okay, but quite a lot of these dykes are what I would refer to as your newfangled penisy dykes.
Yeah, for sure. These dykes all have dicks. It is telling that they start off this list with trans dykes. It's actually an order of preference.
Yeah, you absolutely cannot do anything that's lesbian adjacent without making it very clear that people with penises are obviously welcome to be
totally involved. I'm sure the asexual dykes are going to love to be in this bog porn. It's one thing asexuals are known for.
At that point, you're basically just doing like one of those Tough Mudder races. If you're not in it for the sex, why are you in a bog porn?
All right, Helen, thank you for this update from Turf Islands. All of the most important news coming from your homeland.
I'm sorry. That's all I can say. I'm really sorry.
Okay, Helen. All right, let's move on. My segment takes place in the world of BreadTube. Helen, are you familiar with BreadTube?
I'm really not, and I think that reflects very well on me. So I'm very excited for you to tell me about it.
I'm sort of surprised you're not more familiar with this. You might be, you just don't know that term for it. So it's the term commonly used to describe leftist YouTube. And so the most famous BreadTuber is ContraPoints, great friend of the pod. And like her, many BreadTubers focus on social justice, queer issues, alternative and somewhat wacky takes on history, things like that. This bog porn thing, they would absolutely love this. And they make extremely long, like Killers of the Flower Moon long, video essays about, for instance, why late capitalism is transphobic. Does that make sense?
No, because I've never understood what late capitalism means, and I don't think anyone does. It's very premature, isn't it? It's like calling somebody like, oh, I'm so delighted that you're going to be my first wife. And you think, what? Hang on a minute, what do you know that I don't?
The thing I love about this term is that it was coined in like the 1930s.
Even later capitalism.
Yes. Yes. So our main character today is a BreadTuber named James Summerton. He's a gay Canadian video essayist who focused on queer literature, films, culture, and history. His co-writer was named Nick Hergott, and his YouTube channel before he nuked it, and we will get to why he nuked it later, had 330,000 subscribers, and he posted videos with names like Disney's War Against Gay Kids and The Necessity of Gay Crime. And here's an excerpt from his 2021 video, an over-emotional look at why J.K. Rowling is bad.
Back to Rowling. I can't wrap my head around how all of this happened. Honestly, how this woman who wrote books that defined my adolescence and adolescences of queer people around the world became so toxic. How did she so quickly go from being the author held up by millions as an example of wokeness to this?
We'll never know. Did you see that great quote by Miriam Margolyes this week in which she said, like, Harry Potter's for children. It's been 25 years. Some of you really need to move on. Like, you need to get a personality instead of a Hogwarts house.
It's so true.
And I just appreciated that. It was up there with the time that Ian McShane said about Game of Thrones, like, why is everyone treating this as like it's Shakespeare? It's just, quotes, tits and dragons.
And incest. The adults who get invested in Harry Potter are, they're basically Disney adults. It's not that different.
Yeah, well, when I wrote my first piece about J.K. Rowling post the kind of essay, the one of, you know, J.K. Rowling's Voldemort now, it became very obvious to me that basically everyone who ran the Harry Potter fan sites were basically my age. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I like Harry Potter. It's a great series. I've read it a number of times. I've watched the films. They repeat them and I like to marvel at children being bad at acting. So I like to watch them. But, you know, it's a bit like, let kids have stuff and do adult things now.
I'm also very curious about how many people who, because the overlap between the Potter fans, like the hardcore Potter fans who grew up and were still hardcore Potter fans, and queers, that's a circle. And how many of them have Harry Potter tattoos that they then had to go get removed?
Oh, definitely. I saw people having their Deathly Hallows tattoos removed, and you think,
yeah.
Eh. But then again, I know somebody who named their kid after Atticus Finch, which before that sequel came out seemed like a really good idea, like a paragon of justice. So I think, yeah, we've all learned a valuable lesson.
That's very much a millennial, children of millennials name. I also, one thing that I found interesting about this was that before she came out as a TERF, she was held up as a paragon of wokeness, because to him, that's a virtue. Mm. And I like so rarely hear somebody use that term with neutrally, sure, but usually with derision. And I think that says something about our different corners of the internet. Like, I have not heard anyone use that as anything but pejorative in years. But for him, it's like, she used to be woke and now she's not. And that's a bad thing. And he also, he makes it all about himself, right? Classic Harry Potter fan narcissism. And he later in the video, he goes into detail about what he sees as Rowling's descent into bigotry. What was her path there? And he blames Rupert Murdoch in the UK press. He blames Australian feminist Sheila Jeffries. And at one point, he says that both Brexit and Donald Trump's 2016 election victory were blamed on trans people. And I swear to God, I was around then. And I don't recall anyone blaming like Trace Strangio and his trans friends for the election of Donald Trump. I mean, did that happen?
No, far be it from me to argue with the impeccable fact-checking skills of this weepy guy on YouTube. But at the time of Brexit, the Tory party and the Labour party in Britain were both committed to self-ID. Yeah. That, you know, that lasted... the 2015 was the Women Equality Select Committee hearing, and it was chaired by a Tory MP that recommended self-ID. And that was, you know, the Tories were curious about that. Labour were fully on board with it. So, you know, I mean, you could say kind of Brexit was a backlash to progressivism or identity politics or kind of wokeness generally. That's sort of supportable. But then the other thing about Trump, if you remember, 2016 era Trump was, I'd let Caitlyn Jenner use whatever bathroom she wanted to at Trump Tower.
Totally.
The Republican Party hadn't.
He would sexually assault her. That's how woke he was on trans issues.
The ultimate endorsement of her femininity. But right, like that was, you know, and the Republican Party hadn't really fully latched onto the electoral potential of just going, we know what a woman is.
This was way before the backlash.
Yeah. I think they're still in the front lash. I'm also not entirely clear how Rupert Murdoch figures in this, given that J.K. Rowling fairly notoriously hates all journalists. I mean, that is what the character of Rita Skeeter is, mm-hmm. basically like a Murdoch journalist who just sort of makes things up. So I'm not entirely clear how he did that, but there we go.
Well, that will actually be answered for you shortly, but that's his vibe. So scoldy, nasal homosexual who knows more than you do. He's had some minor scandals before the big one that we're going to get to today. So for instance, in December 2022, Nebula, that's a popular streaming service and YouTube competitor, they declined to take him on. And he said that this was because Nebula had, quote, no queer content. And this upset Nebula content creators like trans woman Jesse Chender. That's Jesse, isn't it? And that's what he's been doing on book leave. Anyway, so they got in a fight about this Nebula thing. And fans of hers said that during this period, James swatted her. We couldn't find any evidence to support that allegation. Just people saying it online. And for what it's worth, I doubt it. But anyway, some people think that he's shady. So that was in 2022. And then in March of 2023, he caused a bit of an upset on Twitter by tweeting this. There's a photo in our notes. Helen, please describe.
So it's that popular meme of some sort of cartoon character. Again, I've been watching films made for, you know,
adults.
So I'm not familiar with it, with all the swords pointing at them, you know, which is classically like, what's an opinion that will have you like this? And then Doctress Snow, brackets she, her, has tweeted, "What's a sex work opinion that'll have you like this?" And James Summerton has quote tweeted with it, "Not only should it be legal, but it should be subsidized as a mental health service."
Mm-hmm. He's very clearly not American. We do not subsidize health.
I mean, is the lesbian bog porn not enough for him? What does he want?
Okay, so he followed it up with a second tweet. Helen, please read this.
"For the majority of people, sex, brackets, and human contact can be an imperative to a healthy state of mind. A kind and talented sex worker can make someone feel wanted for the first time in their life. I know sex workers who have pulled people back from suicide just by being there for them." Sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but like, it's a very odd definition of being there for someone, isn't it? I like to be there for you by letting you put your penis in my vagina. It's just what friends do.
Yeah, so he took a lot of flack for this. He was briefly the main character on Twitter. The tweets have now been deleted, but a couple weeks after that, he complained that the Twitter reactions to his bizarre beliefs about sex work had led to a drop in his Patreon numbers. Frankly, I kind of doubt that because I don't think that the audience that he cultivated are like hardcore TERFs who think that sex work is inherently damaging. They're more like, you know, the sex work is work crowd, but this will come back later too. So there's been some drama off and on, rumors about various wrongdoings. But he was doing pretty well, so he had a popular YouTube channel, he was reportedly bringing in six figures on Patreon, and he had a big private Discord. And then recently, things changed for Summerton. Before we get to that, though, we need to introduce a new character, Harry Brewis, aka H-Bomber Guy. He's a very big name on BreadTube, he has over 1.5 million subscribers. Some of his most popular videos focus on things like debunking the link between vaccines and autism, or climate change denial. And he's legitimately, he's famous online and somewhat of a hero in social justice spaces. So you might remember this, Helen. So in 2019, the controversial British trans kids charity Mermaid had some public funding withheld. So Brewis responded to this by playing Donkey Kong on Twitch for 57 hours. He raised £265,000 and big names like AOC made cameos on his stream. You popped in for that, right?
Do you know what? I can't do Twitch. And this is the same reason I can't do YouTube. I don't know if you feel the same, but this is just a generational thing. Where in people's lives just watching this large amount of videos come into?
Right.
Like, can these people not skim read? I just think it's so inefficient just to, anyway.
Well, watching people play video games reminds me of being a kid and you would go over to someone's house and like you would have to sit around and watch their brother play video games. Like this, I find this incredibly dull.
Right. One of the best things about being an adult is that I get to play my own video games and I don't have to share my console with anyone.
Because you're a sex segregationist, you make your husband have his own.
It's true. He plays Civ downstairs while I've been playing Bioshock upstairs this last weekend. That's God made the two genders like that, and that's how things should be.
So in December 2022, Brewis, his producer Kat Lowe, she started sniffing around Summerton. She was one of the people who'd spread the rumor that he'd swatted Jesse Gender, and she also tweeted around that same time that she'd heard that Summerton had plagiarized some of his videos. So she starts poking around, asking questions. And then a full year later, so December 3rd, 2023, Harry Brewis, H-Bomber Guy, drops this bombshell video entitled Plagiarism and YouTube. It was 3 hours and 51 minutes long. Helen, do you want to take a bathroom break before we watch this?
Oh, no. No.
Okay. So if you break it down, which Jessica, the 80s baby, heroically did, the video consists of 1 hour and 49 minutes of Brewis calling out minor YouTubers for plagiarism, and the remaining 2 hours and 1 minute are focused entirely on James Summerton. And the Summerton content starts with a chapter entitled The Twist You Expected. Let's watch the beginning of that here.
The first video of his I ever saw was about Disney's relationship with the queer community, and in it he claims Disney set up an event called Gay Night and claimed to give the profits to charity, but actually kept the money.
During the 1990s, Disney's parks also tried profiting from their LGBT fans by creating Gay Night, a one-night-a-year event at the parks where LGBT folk would be the main guests. It was a big hit. Initially, the revenue was all to be donated to the Aid for AIDS Foundation, but by 1995, donations to the charity had dried up. And Disney was keeping all of the profits for themselves.
he's misremembering a really well-known event. Gay Night was not set up by Disney, they didn't sanction it. A travel agency rented the park out for the night, and they kept the money they were supposed to have donated. This is a bit sloppy, but then he claims the more progressive CEO Bob Iger expanded Gay Nights into full gay day events.
Under his stewardship, Disney switched from the once-a-year Gay Night at Disney parks to the full Gay Days event, rebranding the occasion into a more family-friendly affair.
Now, obviously, Iger couldn't rebrand something Disney wasn't doing and had no control over. Gay Days is actually a completely separate event, which is also unofficial and unsanctioned by Disney. Also, it started before Gay Night, and 15 years before Iger became CEO. It's kind of impressive how wrong this was. He's giving fucking Disney credit for the actions of independent queer people. It really downplays the work that people put into organizing stuff like Gay Days. It's super disappointing, honestly.
So the video is just full of examples of Somerton just getting shit wrong. And as Bruce points out, his whole thing is about elevating marginalized groups like Disney gays. And he gets shit so wrong that he continually erases them. Just as an example, like he also claimed that some Japanese ice skating anime couldn't be as overtly gay as fans wanted to because Japan has a law restricting gay content to nighttime. Apparently he was totally wrong about that. And Bruce says, basically, Somerton reads something on Twitter, he doesn't bother to fact check it, he puts it in his videos, people repeat it, and he just spreads misinformation all over the place. And then he gets to the plagiarism stuff.
Normally in this situation, I would just not watch his videos and live my life. But over the last couple of years, Somerton has been repeatedly accused of plagiarism. In response, Somerton has claimed he never ripped off anyone, and the times he did weren't even that bad anyway.
If I had been plagiarizing videos, I wouldn't have a channel. I would be called out all the time by people saying he stole my shit, but I don't plagiarize. The one time that there actually was plagiarism, it was by mistake, and I fixed it immediately, and it is no longer in my video. And the other two accusations, one was silly.
That's an interesting way of saying you didn't do it.
When three or four separate videos have three or four separate plagiarism controversies attached. There's not three or four.
Somerton is telling the truth here. There are not three or four accusations. Whenever these allegations are brought up, however, a fan of his will normally pop up to accuse them of harassing a gay man and claim this is all part of a deliberate homophobic campaign against a queer creator.
Right, I don't mean to be rude, but I can practically hear this man's fedora. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he reminds me a bit of that guy Yahtzee, who used to do very fast game reviews and talk incredibly quickly into his microphone from that bit. But I think the thing that's kind of really weird a bit is I would never have thought that there was an audience for people so intensely parsing people's casual speech. You know, the bit when he kind of says, like, and that's right, you know, I'm calling this plagiarism silly. That's a strange way of denying it. And you're like, but it is obviously a way of denying it. If something's silly, you're saying it's not true. But also, why are we having this argument? Why? Why is like everyone like a sort of Kabbalah scholar poring over the kind of texts? Is that why is this what the internet has become?
He has a massive audience for this sort of content. You might want to think about pivoting.
Do you know what the other thing I just thought? The reason I laughed when I started listening to it is I was like, he's giving it all this kind of light, and I just felt a responsibility to the community.
Yes.
But you can
yes.
sort of tell really that actually what annoys him is that he's massively successful and he thinks a bit of a hack. And I just sort of struck me that in some ways, Somerton is his kind of like his white whale. It's like his Michael Hobbs.
His locale.
He's just like, why do people like this stuff when I think it's bad?
Which I completely understand. Okay, so Somerton says he didn't plagiarize, but Bruce has lots of receipts. So he says later in the video, he says Somerton's video transcripts are frequently plagiarized word for word from articles he found online, old documentaries. He has a clip at one point of Somerton just reading straight from Wikipedia for several minutes, which, unless you're going by the Bill Ackman definition of plagiarism, definitely counts. And Bruce sounds mad in that clip that we just listened to, but he also seems kind of conflicted about his own role in airing Somerton's dirty laundry.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do about this. I don't even know if I should be making this video. I was just trying to double check two or three old plagiarism accusations, and I ended up finding a whole bunch more, and I have functionally made a drama video about some guy. And worse, if this video goes up and is monetized and gets views, I have been paid, financially rewarded, for making this. I don't find that acceptable.
Especially not when the story is really about people who were never compensated for their work being stolen. So to make sure I have no financial incentive to make a video like this again, I'm going to be dividing any of the ad revenue this video makes among the creators James stole from. I'll be conducting a thorough examination of every video James has posted, including the many he has deleted I can find archives of, and contact everyone I can.
I think that what he's talking about here is something you must think about a lot, because I think about it in my journalism, which is you just have so little control now if you drop a grenade somewhere about what you're going to do to someone's life. And, you know, that Kiwi Farms phrase of not touching the poo. If you have 1,000 people in your audience, you know, 0.1% of them touch the poo, that's, the poo has still been touched.
Right.
And like, and I just think that I can understand that feeling of reluctance about, you just don't know what the consequences are of what it is that you're putting out there now. And you can't control that. And you have to be okay with that, even if you don't know.
I mean, I think about that all the time. And I come up with these sort of almost arbitrary metrics about what is like, what is a valid enough story for me to cover on the show? And what it often comes down to is just like, does somebody have enough followers? Which is, it, that's kind of arbitrary too. It's not like once you have 50,000 followers or 100,000 followers, you're immune from the effects of social ostracization. You're not. I mean, if I had my way, I would do this show, never ask people for comment, and they would never ever find out that we did this show about them. Unfortunately, asking people for comment is also a necessary part of doing journalism.
I think that's one of the things that really separates the people I think of as being those kind of, you know, just like people who are podcasters, and they're essentially chat show hosts, from people who are journalists, because there is nothing that is harder than going to somebody. And, you know, I have done this where you have to go to somebody and say, so I've got pretty good evidence that you're, you know, a plagiarist, you're a sex pest, you're a racist. Would you like to comment on that? And most people would rather die than do those things because people are conflict avoidant. But you have to do, I mean, you have to do it legally, you have to do it ethically. And it is the difference. You can't just ring the doorbell and run away.
Right. I mean, I'm in the fortunate position that most people just ignore me.
Yeah, I guess the thing is, when you're doing stuff in the Atlantic or the BBC,
you're on the Atlantic, different.
Yeah, then unfortunately, like, that email address does alert people that, you know, this is going to cause them some problems. So they tend to. And the other thing that people will do when is they will really try and guilt trip you. And that's, I'd rather someone was incredibly rude to me than people try and kind of like make you feel bad about stuff. And I'm quite susceptible to that. So I've had to harden my heart over some time.
I am too. There are stories that I've been working on recently that someone basically begs me not to cover because it will ruin their life. And I will, oftentimes I will listen to them. And then, I mean, my hope is always that they will come back, they'll come back later and say, okay, I'm ready to have this story told.
It does feel a pretty brutal process. And I think that, you know, I think also the other thing is that lots of people who are mentally unwell or unstable seek attention.
Yeah.
And that's very difficult because sometimes you do have to do stories about people who aren't in a really particularly great place, but they've hurt other people and they shouldn't be allowed to do that without consequence. And they're not the only person in the world. And that again, you have to have a, what is that phrase? The Graham Greene phrase, like a sliver of ice in your heart. To kind of,
that must be a British thing.
Yeah. but you have to take the view that if the story is important enough, then you have to be okay with there being negative consequences to doing it. But
yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, I think that is a part of being, you mentioned J.K. Rowling hates journalists. I totally get that. And part of being a journalist is you have to come to terms with the fact that people aren't necessarily going to like you. Some people will, but oftentimes you end up pissing people off. I think journalists like to tell themselves that we're just like speaking truth to power. I'm not deluding myself that that's true in my case. Some of this shit just makes good stories and people want entertainment. I'm here to provide for them.
Well, yeah, but then the other thing, I mean, to go back to Kate Middleton, is that all the people, I'm sure the same people who said how terrible it was, Royal Privacy Invasion, oh, you know, they watched The Crown and they say, oh, the beastly press drove Diana to her death, blah, 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 are the same people making TikTok videos about Princess Charlotte's sleeve is in, you know, what does this tell you about their marriage? Like, it's just natural, prurient human curiosity. But when people have that pointed out to them, they are inevitably quite defensive about it. But you go, I can, you know, why didn't you ever do stuff about good news? Because people don't read it. Like, I'm very sorry that we, you know, we now know exactly what it is that people read, and it is cruel and prurient and intrusive and about sex and drugs and death.
Sorry. And when it's a public figure, when it's the royal family, or even a famous YouTuber, you can tell yourself that you're punching up. It's not like having money shields you from the reality of being human or having followers, especially.
Yeah, and I think that's where punching up came from as a discourse. It was a way for people who trade in very simple moral certainties to be cruel and feel okay right about it, basically, because it was essentially you deserve it.
I like to punch down. I mostly like to punch down. It's just easier. I don't have to look up. It doesn't hurt my neck.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great title for a podcast, actually, punching down, and you just find some marginalized group and wail on them. Yeah, cruelly. But this poor guy, did he actually do anything that was worse than a couple of instances of plagiarism? Were there other allegations against him?
Okay, so there are other allegations. In the chapter entitled Shouldn't Need to Do This, Brewis calls out Somerton for misogyny. So, for example, in his video, Somerton's video, it was called The Troubling Thirst for Jeffrey Dahmer. His source material, it was an article by a woman named Shivani Dubney, featured this sentence, quote, "Now people are thirsting for Dahmer by posting TikToks and tweeting about his supposed attractiveness." And then in Somerton's video, this becomes, "There is a thirst for Dahmer made apparent on TikTok and Twitter with hordes of white women droning over how attractive he is." So it's almost a direct quote, except he inserted the words white women, and this is proof of his misogyny.
That's not misogyny. That's proof he's woke as fuck. Yes, he's called out those white women.
If he had said black woman, there'd be issues.
No. But someone did point out that there was a phase about like, what, like 2019 to 2021, where you could suddenly, things that you said about women, if you white women. Women are so annoying. White women are so annoying. Yay!
It's true that the same thing exists with men. You just...
White men.
Say white men.
The worst.
Cis white men.
Cis white gays. Exactly. Oh my God. Yeah. It's true. You can just insert these words that say that you're punching up. And if you're a guy what he's done here, ironically, for a gay man is he's erased the many white gay men who presumably also find Jeffrey Dahmer quite attractive.
Like his victims.
Initially, I imagine that was true. Yes.
So Brewis did find a lot of plagiarism. At least 22 of Somerton's 56 published videos on YouTube contains plagiarized content. And then after Brewis's video dropped, Redditors sniffed out even more plagiarism, and the H Bomber Guy Discord now features a channel devoted to finding all of the sources that Somerton ripped off. One Redditor also put together a GitHub of Somerton's transcript to encourage internet sleuths to join the fun. This is a real true crime situation. So the H Bomber Guy video created major waves. There are hundreds, thousands of response videos across the internet, and the original video now has over 18 million views.
That's intense. How did Somerton respond?
So he quickly took down the specific videos that Brewis had called out, and he might have been able to wriggle his way out of it, but it turns out that Brewis's video was just the start. Let's take a break, do an ad for our free listeners, and housekeeping.
Katie, have you ever thought about why your wireless bill is so expensive? It's all just radio waves, and how expensive could a single radio wave even be?
I actually have thought about this, and I'm pretty sure it's because fuel prices for super yachts are really high, plus there's property taxes in the Hamptons, donations to political parties, paying off bribes, you got hookers, child support, Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, it's not like America is going to make itself great again. Stuff costs money. But now, thanks to Mint Mobile, you do have a choice. Because right now, Mint Mobile has wireless plans starting at $15 a month. That's like three radio waves. Unlimited talk and text plus data for $15 a month.
All right, Jesse, I'm going to get real with you for a second.
Wait, hold on. We're in an ad, but you're about to get real.
Yeah, I'm about to get real. So,
oh my God.
I got a Mint Mobile free trial because we're doing this advertisement.
And you hate it.
I like it so much. I actually canceled my big wireless plan and Jana's, and we are now fully paying customers of Mint Mobile. And I'm not shitting you. I really did this.
Oh, thank God. Okay. That would have really, if you had not liked it, that would have been a horrible time to spring that on me, and it would have been really bad for the ad. But for anyone who, like you, hates their phone bill, Mint Mobile offers premium wireless again, $15 a month, Katie Herzog approved.
I actually really do like this. It is nice when the company that you're advertising actually provides a service that you like so much that you're willing to pay for it. This is the rare case when this happens. No offense to our other advertisers, but I really like this.
That Houthi ad, I felt so weird about reading.
And one question that I had and one concern that I had was, is the service going to be as good as the old big wireless service that I was paying almost $300 a month for? And the fact is, for me in my area, It is actually better.
And this ad copy informs me that all plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. It's also flexible. You can choose from 3, 6, or 12-month plans and say goodbye to a monthly phone bill.
And you can keep your existing phone. So to get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/blocked.
That's mintmobile.com/blocked. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/blocked. Additional fees, taxes, and restrictions do apply, but go to Mint Mobile for details.
Jesse, true or false? You own a dating service in Brooklyn called Singles Singles.
Before I answer that, I want to note that you wrote this script. Yes. Looking for a mate who truly tingles? Join Singles Singles, where love mingles.
You might want to work on that, but imagine that customers are rushing to your retail dating service. Obviously, that
Wait,
would never
happen. Hold on, hold on. I'm imagining it. Okay, I'm imagining it.
Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a
No.
real POS? You need Shopify for retail.
Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person.
With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly... With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth.
Just keep that. You have to keep that. People like our ads because you don't know how to talk. Source of truth.
Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock.
Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution.
Did you say Shopify?
Shopify, our new knife company.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/barpod, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/barpod to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/barpod. Check out my dating service.
Helen, will you just do it? I can't do it again.
Okay. We are a podcast. You're listening to Blocked and Reported. I'm Helen Lewis. Katie Herzog is also with me. Jesse Single, or as I like to call him, Jesse Sex Not Gender, will be rejoining soon, but he's not around at the moment. You can visit the Reddit at blockedandreported.reddit.com. You can email the personals, I guess, probably still.
No,
I don't know.
No, that's over.
No, don't email the personals. That's terrible.
No, don't.
And most importantly, if you sign up as a primo, you will get an unspecified number of extra episodes. Last month, everyone just went hog wild and started putting out hundreds of extra episodes. But you won't get that all the time. And head over to Substack if you'd like to do that. Don't buy the merch. Katie says it sucks.
It does. It's not the quality of it that sucks. It's just that you might not ever receive it. That's the issue that we're facing here. It's delays with the Houthis or the Hutus, something. Yes, please check us out at blockedandreported.org to become a primo. You get at least 3 extra episodes every month. You get ad-free episodes. You get early episodes. And you get access to our fantastic community. Okay, back to it. So the day after Bruis released his video, another big YouTube creator named Todd in the Shadows released a video of his own. Todd is an old school YouTuber and he's been making content since 2010. He's a music reviewer, so literally all of his other videos are music reviews, but he felt compelled to release his own addition to the Summerton Takedown oeuvre, and his was entitled "I Fact Checked the Worst Video Essayist on YouTube." It's a mere 1 hour and 42 minutes long, so it's practically TikTok length in comparison to Bruce's video. And it doesn't touch on the plagiarism. Instead, he just focuses on everything Summerton got incorrect in his career as a video essayist. So if you watch one overly long YouTube video about James Summerton, this one is a lot more entertaining than Bruce's. Todd systematically calls out 38 lies in Summerton's videos, and then he handily organizes them into an index. So Summerton says, for instance, gay porn invented Skype. He said the reason Hitler murdered Ernst Röhm, who was a leader of the Nazi party, is because he was fat. He said the SS was, quote, teeming with homosexuals. He said Nazis invented our current body standards. He said Disney princesses are marketed to funerals. And the claim that really pissed Todd off, Summerton said that gay activists in the 90s didn't care about employment discrimination and only cared about bourgeois values like marriage.
Do you know what that sounds like? Do you remember that the speech by Dr. Evil in the first Austin Powers about his father would make outrageous claims like he invented the question mark? I just wonder if some of these were just...
That is ridiculous. Mark question, invented the question mark.
Mr. Question. A Belgian prostitute named Chloe with webbed feet. But I'm pretty sure, I'm willing to be fact-checked on this, that the SS was teeming with homosexuals. It's certainly a lot of cross-dressers. And all of the Nazis...
Did you read that in Grace Lowry's book?
And that's a good thing. But the Nazis took a lot of drugs. There's a book called Blitzed, which is about the way that they used amphetamines and other things to keep them awake. I'm sure they were well into chemsex.
The things that we now give to children who fidget too much in school.
Right. Exactly.
That was started by the Nazis.
I am intrigued by gay porn inventing Skype, however. I guess it's a bit like one of those things about the Betamax beat VCR war supposedly was decided by the fact that porn was on VCR tapes, right? So I imagine
it's
an outcrop of that. But I'm glad that someone is doing important fact-checking about the number of homosexuals in the SS. That's God's work.
Okay, so here's a clip from this video. The first voice you hear, this is Todd in the Shadows, and he's repeating this claim of Somerton's.
Gay rights activists in the 90s weren't fighting against employment discrimination.
The battles that rose out of the AIDS epidemic for gay people were access to marriage and military service. When once the queer community was focused on creating the best art and living lives worth telling stories about, the 1990s brought on a new goal. How best to fit in. So many of the gays left alive once the Clinton administration came into being were, to be frank, the boring ones. The gays who knew nobody and who nobody knew. And they rose to the top of the community, and therefore their priorities rose to the top of the community as well. And what did they want? Apparently, they wanted to join the army and have big gay weddings. General employment non-discrimination wasn't all that important to them. Making sexuality and gender identity a protected class, along with sex, race, and religion, wasn't that important to them. They wanted marriage and military. Because they were the good gays. Not the naughty gays who were sleeping around and dying of AIDS. Not the poor gays who couldn't make political contributions. They were the gays with families and commitment ceremonies and office jobs and houses.
Whoo boy. This was the first claim that really got my attention. And it's the entire reason why I watched the rest of his stuff. Disregarding whatever else you want to say about that passage, yes, gay activists were absolutely fighting against employment discrimination and for protected status for sexuality. Those were the fights of the 90s. I heard about that shit all the time. There was a big giant movie about it. During the 90s alone, LGBT activists got employment protections passed in 17 states, as well as an executive order from President Clinton in 1998 protecting them on a federal level, due to pressure from gay organizations. And this is drifting from pure fact-checking a tiny bit, but it is not true that marriage and military service was only a goal for rich conservative gays. Rich people don't join the military. Rich people can hire lawyers to write civil union contracts in lieu of marriage protections. All right?
Okay, what was the movie that was made about gay employment protections?
Philadelphia.
Okay. The thing that's funny to me about that is while America was making very weighty films about the AIDS crisis, what we had in Britain was Chris Morris making... have you ever seen the clip from the Day Today where he does a fake talk show and it's people talking about their experiences with AIDS, and the guy talks about it and then he reveals that he got it from gay sex, and the host goes, "No, you've got bad AIDS, good AIDS from blood transfusions."
The Ryan White AIDS.
Yeah. Anyway, so it was nowhere near as worthy. I can kind of, that of all that felt like a sort of James Somerton stuff felt like kind of like a personal attack on Andrew Sullivan, basically. Like a sort of massive subtweet of his priorities.
Yes. Yeah, except Andrew is fun, and Andrew has AIDS. He just didn't die of it. But yes, yeah, the fun artsy gays died of AIDS, and so that's why we have gay marriage instead of gay orgies. And Todd in the Shadows, he goes on to explain that Somerton's only source for this rather significant claim that he's making is a single quote from Fran Lebowitz, who said, I'll paraphrase here, "The first people who died of AIDS got laid a lot. They were the great artists. The ones who were left were the boring ones." But the thing is, as Todd in the Shadows points out, she wasn't talking about policy or even the fight for gay rights. She was talking about the audience for cultural events, specifically the New York Ballet. Plus, she's Fran Lebowitz. She talks a lot of shit. She rambles. That's what she does. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a good point there, which was about the fact that the gay rights movement found a certain conservatism and alliance building was a great way to achieve their aims, right? Rather than being like, we want to smash the nuclear family, you know, death and patriarchy. It was kind of like, no,
that would come later.
Right. We're normal and just like you. And what we want to do is have normal relationships and where we go and walk our dogs together and, you know, buy cutlery.
And it was incredibly successful. It actually worked.
Yeah.
Right. So after this second big video attack on Somerton, the floodgates just opened. Everyone wanted a slice of the action. Jesse Gender, the creator that Somerton had a beef with about Nebula, that video platform, she popped up again. She said that she'd invited him to join a Discord with Nebula folks to discuss whatever issues he had with them. And he never did, and he never contacted them. And she said on quote or quote, he just wanted to play the victim. And earlier, remember when I said that James complained that after he got dogpiled for that bad tweet about trips to prostitutes being subsidized as mental health, he said he lost money on Patreon? Well, a guy named Dan Olson, who runs a YouTube channel called Folding Ideas, he did a long Twitter thread accusing James of lying about his Patreon figures to grift money from his followers. That thread got 15,000 likes. So people were just, they were loving this. This was like the party of the century.
Now, you know, I think borrowing from Wikipedia is bad and I don't encourage it, and I wouldn't say it's exactly a kind of victimless crime, but it is there as a kind of communal resource. That's the whole point, is to kind of raise the bar of human knowledge and make people better informed. Was there any actual individual writers that got ripped off by him?
Yes, one of those was a former Vox writer, Caitlin Burns, close personal friend of Jesse's. So she said on Twitter that he lifted passages of a bad article that she wrote on Trans Menace J.K. Rowling for his bad video on Trans Menace J.K. Rowling. And that does seem to be true. That thing about Rupert Murdoch and Sheila Jeffries that I mentioned, and you were like, what the fuck was that? He took that from Caitlin Burns.
She just hates Australians. She can't bear them.
Yes, and the UK press, probably mostly you. A writer named Gita Jackson also published a blog post titled, "Please Stop Asking Me to Sue James Somerton." He apparently read verbatim from an article that she wrote for Vice on Attack of the Titan, and that included quotes that she got from academics and other sources. He did plagiarize. Like, that is, it is very well documented.
It's a really good question, though, because one of the problems I have with internet debate now being, and internet discourse being so video-based and audio-based, is it's really hard to cite sources and stop, and people just sort of things and they sound very, you know, plausible. And if they're charismatic, you know, this is what all my BBC series, The New Gurus, was all about, was that we just like to listen to attractive, interesting people chat shit. And they don't, you know, it just has to flow over us in this kind of wave of discourse. It's not like reading an academic article where everything is very careful and, well, a good academic article where everything is careful and sourced and referenced. That general standard is really hard to apply. I can't imagine what a YouTube video with footnotes would kind of look like exactly. I guess there are some out there.
Right. I mean, even a podcast, I mean, we do tons of research for these episodes. I know it doesn't sound like it, but we actually do a ton of research and we try to be good about putting our sources in the show notes. But there is an awkwardness about doing citations on a podcast or video the way that you can footnote text. It's just much less awkward. That said, in some cases, he was reading verbatim from people's articles.
That's beyond cheeky. I mean, that's at that point, right. I think there's a real problem. This happens quite a bit where you get people who are at the top end and they produce such a huge volume of work and they do it by chewing up and parasiting off the work of people who are much less well rewarded and well paid. And that really is unjust.
And I think that is the thing that really pissed people off about this. Plus, they threw in that most of the people he was ripping content off of were queer, marginalized, blah, blah, blah. They were trans women of color. There was also an issue with money. So one of his alleged victims was a duo that goes by the name the Ace Couple. This is a married couple that doesn't fuck. Their names are Courtney and Royce. And on December 13th, they published a podcast called We Were Personally Victimized by James Somerton.
It's the personally victimized that I think lifts it to the level of art, right? It wasn't we were impersonally victimized or we were part of a class action suit. No. Us personally.
It's their lived experience.
It's one of those things that I think people in 20 years' time will look back on and just really be, it's like carbon dating. They'll be able to, like, oh, that came from the 2020s.
So what happened is that in early 2022, Somerton launched an Indiegogo campaign, so a fundraising campaign for Telos. You think that's how you say that? Telos Pictures?
Telos. It's ancient Greek, Katie.
Telos Pictures. A studio he was founding that would make LGBT films. Is that how you say faggot in Greek?
No, but it's like teleology, isn't it? It's the study of knowledge. She said confidently. Oh. Yeah.
So this couple, Courtney and Royce, they got excited about this because they think asexuals don't get enough representation. I get, what do they not watch children's shows? That's all asexuals. And apparently they think...
So I go past now London Bridge Station quite a lot, which has got a load of flags on it. It's got one that's got the symbol pie on it, which I genuinely thought was part of that piss take flag that you had, that had the furry flag and like the ISIS flag. Yeah. But I just feel like the asexual pride has been put on Earth to make me turn into a reactionary blowhard. Yeah. You know, I don't want to be someone who's sitting on Twitter going... You don't have sex, love. That's called being married. Like a sort of Northern club comedian from the 1970s. But come on, it's not a struggle. Like, if you don't want to have sex, that's fine. But I don't need to hear about it. It's boring enough hearing about people's sex lives, let alone hearing about their lack of sex lives.
Although I absolutely hate sex in movies. I don't like the sound of kissing. It's like, to me, it's like hearing somebody. Hate it. Absolutely hate it. And so I actually do think there should be more asexual representation in movies. That way I wouldn't have to watch a sex scene. Anyway.
I watched Poor Things at the weekend, and I would recommend that you stay away from that film.
I lasted 90 seconds. I didn't even get to the sex part. I just turned it off because it was A, black and white, and B, arty.
Right. Okay. I mean, you wouldn't... Yeah, it's got some quite sweet animals that have been sewn together. You might have liked that, but you wouldn't have liked the bit where she goes to work in the brothel. That would have been... You know, my dad, apparently, when he was courting my mother, used to make them go... Whenever there was people kissing on screen at the cinema, which obviously it was so long ago, at the end of people kissing, he would make this noise. Like that. I don't know, he'd go like... And mysteriously, they've been married for like 50 years. Anyway, I digress.
This explains so much about you. Okay, so they wanted to support this because they think, like, for in their brains, this ace couple, they think that counts as queer. They talked to James and asked if he intended to represent asexuals and hire asexuals as part of this film production thing. And he said, yes, of course, asexuals are queer, whatever. So they decided to join his Indiegogo campaign at the highest level, which would have gotten them executive producer credits, advanced screenings, merch. They could have a t-shirt that says, I don't fuck on it. And they were about to give him $1,200. And this is what happens next.
Do you remember what I said to you? This is what's extra embarrassing. Do you remember what I said to you before I clicked that button?
In vague terms, but I have the feeling that it's burned into your brain a lot more clearly.
I looked over to you and I said, are we really about to give this much money to a cis white guy that we do not know personally? And we had a final little like, if it's for the ace community, if it helps us, if we can get several bits of representation out there, it'll have been worth it. But there was a voice in the back of my head that was shaming me. The voice in the back of my head was saying, don't you dare give this much money to a white dude that you don't even know, who's not even ace himself. Like, that voice was telling me that, and I ignored those alarm bells, and that is why this is so embarrassing.
Okay, not to be rude, but I do now believe these people don't have sex. You know what I mean, though? They both look like they spend a lot of time like working out their D&D dice. I'm sorry. This is terrible. I'm attacking my nerd people here.
This is gamer and gamer.
So they decided not to help the ace community by donating to this.
No, they did.
Miss Patran.
They did.
Oh, right. Okay. So they just actually got loads of money. It just turns out they don't even... I mean, I guess... I'm not going to say, like, not having sex, they've saved a lot of money. I guess if they don't have kids, they've saved a lot of money.
How much did the sex cost? A lot of money where you live?
Just, you know, you got to buy the swings. You got to buy the bog.
True.
It's very hard to keep a bog hydrated, Katie. You don't understand in London.
What I like about this is how they make this.
Sorry, that switched on my Siri. I don't know why. I swear I haven't activated when I talk about bog porn. Please carry on.
They're so concerned about giving money to a white guy. Like, she keeps bringing this up. He's a white guy. What race would you guess that these two people are? One of whom is a male. Well, just guess. Canadian.
I mean, they're exactly not even white. They're Canadian. A lot of people in Australia have been saying "oot." By the way, that has fulfilled all my stereotypes about Canadians. I've been enjoying that.
Just to be clear, I put a photo in the notes. Helen, please describe them.
They are dressed as vampires, and
which is weird because vampires are the sexiest of the ghouls.
Vampires love to bang. I've seen True Blood. They can't stop them. And also the whole idea of vampirism, like exchanging fluids, is a metaphor for sex. Anyway, let's not take that up with them. But they are not only vampires, but they're Victorian vampires. So she's in a kind of big poofy hair and a corset and a bustle. He's got the classic dude in IT, long hair, waistcoat, top hat. and they've both got a lot of eyeliner on. I probably get on with them quite well. Like, I imagine we've got a lot of shared interests in common. Not sex, as it turns out, but other shared interests in common.
And what race would you say these two are?
Oh, they're so white. I mean, they're goths. Like, the whitest of all people are goths.
They're not just white, they're goths. Anyway.
They powder themselves white. That's how white goths are.
They're white people in white face.
Exactly. It's actually disgusting.
Anyway, so they donated $1,200. In total, James raised about $65,000 for this company. He produced nothing. And according to the Indiegogo page, it took him 18 months to even incorporate the company. Maybe it's harder to do in Canada, I'm not sure. And as Courtney said, he didn't update his backers for 14 months. This obviously led to a lot of questions from his supporters. Like, the top comment on his Indiegogo page is, quote, "Stop hiding like a coward. Face what you've done. Refund all of us who supported you under false pretenses, including on Patreon." There's also, quote, "Give us back our money, scammer." That's in all caps. And, "Okay, looks like the jig is up. Time to issue refunds." And my personal favorite, "Do you plan on featuring any trans femme characters in your projects? I'm not one, but many of my close friends are, and they often discuss how underrepresented they are in queer spaces and media." But mostly it's people asking for refunds.
I mean, as demonstrated by the poor quality dyke-based lesbian bog porn that was getting £85,000, now cancelled with Scottish money, it's not that hard. He realistically could have just got someone on camera reading out a terrible poem about being a trans femme, and that would have technically counted. Yes. No one was expecting that he was going to make, the new Poor Things, or even the new Titanic, gay Titanic.
He could have had Courtney and Royce could have been on camera not fucking.
Exactly. Just talking about being Victorian goths.
Asexual porn.
Yeah, and that would have been fine. Like, people were not backing this because of the presumed quality of the output. They were backing it because they felt it was part of a political project they endorsed. And that, frankly, is laziness of him not to take advantage of that by phoning in the absolute minimum that he could.
Right, just at least a few updates. And the other thing is, this is Canada, where they actually fund artists based on how marginalized they are. And so I feel like he didn't even need to do the Indiegogo. He should have gotten this. This should have been taxpayer funded.
He really missed a trick by not pretending that he was a First Nations person. There was that great piece in The New Yorker, but I mean, when you look into it, the number of pretendians is extreme. Toronto Life just had a story about two Indian sisters whose mother claimed that they were Native American just to rinse money out of stuff.
I think it's possible that there are no actual Native Americans.
There is one academic called Kim Tallbear who gets quoted in anything. I think she may be the only actual First Nations person in Canada.
It's her and the woman who is exposing the pretendians. Although maybe she's a pretendian too. That would be quite the twist.
Oh, but that is the kind of classic story of those people, is that the ones who are most, Jessica La Bombolera, if you remember, who was very
living
authentic, turned out to be Jessica Krug. Are we believing that this guy is doing what he's accused of doing?
So I think the allegations that people like H Bomber Guy and Todd in the Shadows looked into are true. I think the Ace Couple, I think that stuff's true. I mean, you can see on the Indiegogo campaign, he didn't do anything with this money. Or at least he might have done something with the money. Like, $65,000 is obviously not enough money to create a film studio, but he didn't communicate well with whatever he was doing with the money. I'm not sure if he intentionally ripped off his patrons and supporters or if he's just bad at giving updates. But as with all internet drama, this one did shift and mutate somewhat. So, like, one Substacker posted a blog speculating that this whole incident had been a coordinated takedown by Nebula to destroy this project. Telos Pictures. Am I saying that wrong? Telos? Telos?
Yeah, Telos. Telos. Yeah.
It's very speculative, but Summerton really did not seem to have many defenders, and his own co-writer, Nick Hergott, he initially claimed that he wasn't involved in the plagiarism because he didn't do any of the research, and then he made a public statement announcing that he would no longer work with Summerton and that the money donated for the Indiegogo should be returned.
So did Somerton do what I would always advise people to do in crisis PR, which is just not say anything and carry on as completely normal, or did he freak out?
He freaked out. So he deleted all his YouTube videos, his Twitter account, his Discord, and his Patreon account. And then on December 21st, he released a tearful apology video. It's only a half hour long. This is by far the shortest video in the entire saga, but it's definitely the hardest one to watch. So he starts the video crying and saying that he just got out of the hospital after being treated for suicidal ideation. I'm not going to make you watch that part, but I do want you to listen to his apology.
I want to say that I'm really, really sorry. Really, really sorry. For this stuff in the videos, not crediting people and... For a lot of videos, you know, I did the opening titles thing, and I tried to put, like, this is based on X's, this person's research or this person's book, but I know now that that wasn't enough, that wasn't okay.
That is hard to listen to because he doesn't, like, the hesitancy of it and the long silences do make it sound very credible. I mean, he could be the world's, you know, absolutely best actor, but it is not a self-dramatizing look at me performance of sorriness. He genuinely sounds quite destroyed by it.
Yes.
Did that make people lay off? Did it change the narrative at all?
Not at all. The general consensus was that this was a paint-by-numbers apology video. We've all seen them 1,000 times before. James, do better. People did not accept his apology. So like a TikToker named Carter Kalchick, he made a now deleted video asking, should we treat James Somerton with more empathy? And the answer was no. So after the negative response to this apology video, Somerton deleted it and he disappeared from the internet for 2 months. Then on February 26th, he finally broke his silence with a second apology video. This one is called A Measured Response. It's much more highly produced, and it begins with a content warning for discussion of self-harm. So this is the beginning of it.
Just a disclosure, this video is monetized, but revenue from it will be sent along to H Bomber Guy's team to be dispersed to the people whose work I plagiarized. If his team won't accept it, I'll be making monthly donations to Wikipedia and Trans Lifeline going forward. You may have also noticed that a few of my past videos have gone up on the channel again, and revenue from those as well will also be sent along with the revenue from this video.
So he's going to make monthly donations to Wikipedia and Trans Lifeline. It's sort of fascinating. That is the kind of, you know, like in medieval times, they sort of pay indulgences to the Pope. That you just sort of have to...
But it's Trans Lifeline.
And it's Trans Lifeline of all the charities. Like, obviously, right. Fine, we can go anywhere once, but you sort of knew it would be that one. And it doesn't...
Although I do think they got rid of the embezzlers, didn't they? Or did they just cover that up? Unclear.
Yeah, it's one for your lawyers. But you're right. This one is...
I'm American. I can say what I want.
This one has got the kind of pulled focus, and he is talking much more kind of fluently, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not as raw.
It's not as raw. And the whole like, oh, I've monetized this and stuff like that. I think it's really difficult when people are in this situation because obviously you do have to think about it incredibly carefully how everything's going to be received. But also the very act of doing that and talking about it makes you sound less innocent in a weird way. It makes you sound manipulative because you're trying to anticipate the response. And it's not, it's not absurd, but it does make you sound less authentic, I guess.
Yeah. So he goes on to say he spent the last few months personally apologizing to everyone he plagiarized. He also apologizes to his audience for being a bad representative of the queer community. I will accept his apology for that. I personally enjoyed this part.
I'm a cis white gay man. No matter how much I try to be a good spokesperson, I can never really truly understand the life experiences of other far more put upon members of the queer community.
Okay, so this is more now he's gone into the kind of classic pro forma, how in lived experience, how could I know, cis white gay.
Yeah, so we get an actual privilege disclaimer from a guy who apparently ended up in the hospital because he was going to kill himself after a giant swath of the internet decided that he was a villain because he was a plagiarist. But still, he's got it better than trans creators of color. And he also claims to have memory issues due to a childhood head injury. Helen, how would you guess this one went down?
You know, the Queen Mother had that, you know, never explain, never complain. And I just think that as soon as you start saying that there's some reason why you've done these things,
yes,
people who already staked a lot of internet reputation on calling you a bad person don't want to be made feel bad when it turns, yes, out that actually because of your childhood trauma or your health issues or your, you know, budgie was ill or whatever it might be.
You took Ambien.
Yeah, that would make them look bad. So they angrily react. So I'm guessing it went down badly.
It went down very badly. But I think that's a really good point. I mean, sometimes people do have extenuating, like Kate Corin, the woman who wrote who was like Goodreads bombing, review bombing. We did a show on it a few weeks ago, the author, the YA author. She came out later and said that she was dealing with substance abuse issues and having like essentially a psychotic break. I have no idea if it's true or not, but if it is true, would severe alcoholism and a psychotic break make you do irrational things? Yes, it would. it sort of is a pretty good excuse, but it doesn't matter. Or like Kanye and his bipolar. Does bipolar make you, yeah.
There's a new documentary coming out soon about John Galliano, who, if you remembered, sort of disappeared from the fashion world after he was caught saying terrible anti-Semitic things while obviously pissed out of his brain outside some cafe in Paris. And it's interesting, I was reading an interview about the kind of guy who's made it, and he sort of blew up his life, kind of. It was one of those situations where the stress was so much that you think he sort of did it self-destructively, if you see what I mean. And I think that's quite a common dynamic, that people get trapped in these situations that are sort of unbearable to them and they can't find a way out. So
totally.
they begin to do really incredibly risky things or stupid, silly things.
People do that in relationships all the time. You want out of your unhappy marriage? Well, instead of just leaving, you go and have an affair with your neighbor or whatever.
Right, exactly. And because you don't have the kind of courage to do things, you almost want that decision to be taken out of your hands.
Exactly.
And actually there's a sort of weird relief to people when they're caught. Like sometimes the mistakes that people make are so sloppy that you can't come to any conclusion other than part of them wanted someone else to stop this for them.
Yeah. Well, in this case, people were looking for reasons to stay mad and they found one. So it turns out that a lot of the videos that H Bomber Guy makes have the words "a measured response" in the title. So like vaccines and autism, a measured response. Climate denial, a measured response. Flat Earth, a measured response. And so because James Summerton called this second apology video a measured response, people immediately started accusing him of plagiarizing H-bomber guy, Harry Brewis.
But this is always how plagiarism accusations go, I find. They start off with a few headline things that are kind of reasonable or interesting, and then people start passing it down to the tiniest little level. And it's, you know, eventually tiny bits of speech that everybody uses all the time are kind of drafted in.
This is calling his video a measured response is sort of a clever allusion to the guy who called him out.
Yeah, there's also a problem that happens when, you know, you try and kind of, yes, exactly. You try and reference something and people think it's a lift,
right,
and it's not. You're being
intentional.
You thought that everybody would get to that reference.
We get it. Yeah. So anyway, 3 days after Summerton's measured response went online, Brewis tweeted to say that Summerton hadn't gotten in touch with him about sending him the revenue from the video. So that didn't help matters at all. And just like in the first round of James Ghazi, this time around, everyone again wanted a piece of the James Summerton pie. There are dozens of response videos from big bread tube names to tiny clout chasers, Vouch, old friend, connoisseur of goblin porn, and admitted horse dick fantasist. He's one of the biggest political streamers. He made a response video that is an hour and 48 minutes of him analyzing the apology video. And it includes lines like, "The problems with James Summerton are the same problems I have with generative AI. And he's just a narcissist. That's it. He's just a narcissist." But he didn't accidentally leak his short stack porn file on the stream, unfortunately.
Imagine making an hour and 48 minute video calling someone else a narcissist.
I know.
These guys, just an attention seeker. That's all that he wants.
I say on my live stream.
I know. Where's my powerful stallion energy?
So two apologies down, both failed. Almost nobody is defending this guy. There is one comment on the Vouch subreddit suggesting that people leave Summerton alone, and it has one upvote. So at the beginning of March, Summerton resurrected an old YouTube channel of his, and he tried to rebrand himself as James of Telos. The first video he released was about a queer serial killer. The video did include a full list of resources at the end, But Harry Brewis, H. Bomber Guy, noticed something about that list of resources. He tweeted about it. Helen, please look at and describe this tweet.
James has released a new video. Hang on a minute, what ethnicity is this man? So I can do the correct accent. Is this guy's Canadian?
He's somewhere from your... H. Bomber Guy, he's British or...
Oh, he's British, isn't he? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Why didn't I do him as a cheeky Cockney then? James has released a new video and it's pure content now. His list of sources, which is a step up at least, makes it abundantly clear he just loosely paraphrased his favorite true crime podcast.
I feel like the accent might be wrong. He strikes me as someone who went to public school. Is that what you call private school?
Yes.
He's a YouTuber.
A really posh private school is ironically a public school. Unfortunately, I went to private school and sound like I went to private school, so I can't really take the piss out of myself here. But so the sources include 12 episodes of a podcast I listened to covering a murder, an article about the podcasters covering this murder. That said, congratulations to James on his non-plagiarized video. Oh dear.
Yeah, so he has a screenshot here from the YouTube video, and it is literally 12 episodes of a single podcast and then an article about the podcast. So once again, the relaunch was a total failure. James put up a few more videos, including one called The Queer Normality of Bob's Burgers, and the comments are universally negative on all of them. Then on March 4th, James Summerton posted this on Twitter. Helen, please read.
Oh, and this is when someone's written something on the notes app, which is never a good sign.
Night mode.
Yeah, night mode. If this message is live, it means I scheduled it before ending things. I have videos scheduled to go out over the next couple of days, nothing new. I just wanted Nick's portfolio of work to be available. I've left directions that any money from those videos be donated to the Canadian Association for Suicide Prevention. They've tried very hard to pull me back, but there's simply no life for me anymore. I've lost everything, my only friend, my livelihood, my name, and it's all my own fault. The world will be a little bit better off now. Goodbye.
Right after that, his Twitter account was deactivated.
I mean... the really awful thing is that I've been on Twitter long enough now that I've seen a couple of suicide notes that are genuinely real, you know, that you've later found out the person mm-hmm. has in fact died. And it's really difficult because you see these kind of tropes in suicide notes a lot of the kind of, you know, either that now they'll all be sorry or the kind of, I know it's horrible to say self-pitying, but the kind of, you know, sort of, I'm leaving you with this, you know, this will be my final testament on earth. And they're very hard to read because obviously suicide is devastating and it doesn't mean anything. And you want to tell people that they shouldn't write things like this because it's no substitute for actually being alive. But that is pretty dark.
Right. And as of this recording, nobody can say for sure whether or not James Summerton is actually dead. So his former co-writer, Nick Harrogate, he posted this on Blue Sky, quote, "Right now, and to my knowledge, there's nothing to worry about," which made people think that this was fake or somehow a mistake. "I tried to confirm this with the Toronto police. I didn't get anywhere. And in fact, I'm not even totally sure he lives in Toronto. So I might have like been barking up the wrong Canadian police station." But it started a whole new round of speculation and finger pointing. So this has been a huge story on Twitter, on YouTube, on TikTok, and one of the first people to respond to Summerton's suicide note was, trigger warning, Keffels. Let's check that out.
I think that this situation speaks to something that I and many other people have long seen as a problem with the internet in general. When people in a community, especially a marginalized community, we want to hold them accountable. But the problem is that there are no actual mechanisms for what accountability is supposed to look like, and everyone has their own different and unique idea of what accountability should be. So no one can actually truly be happy. And in a lot of circumstances, what this leads to is intense harassment campaigns and online scrutiny that lasts for years and destroys careers without any true way for people to redeem themselves after the mistakes that they've made. And when your livelihood is tied to how much people like you online, it can feel devastating, absolutely excruciatingly painful and alienating to watch as you're getting ruthlessly dragged online by thousands and thousands of people. If you have existing mental health conditions while you're also dealing with this, it can be a recipe for absolute disaster, as it has been many, many, many times in the past.
Okay, so that was more empathetic from Keffels than I expected. Although I do like, in talking of internet narcissism, the way she had to preface it by saying, I've actually been saying this for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just can't make the observation. You have to point out that you are the lone Cassandra who has foreseen this.
Right. And she also later in the video says, like, not that I'm defending him. You know, you also have to make sure that you are not defending the guy who might be dead because he plagiarized. It's a high crime. This is, however, one of the rare cases where I will say Keffels is right. And she goes on later to say, yeah, it can feel good to be part of a mob, but when the mob turns on you, no one will defend you. And she urges people to have more compassion. It was very un-Keffels-like. Unfortunately for Keffels, after putting this out, people began attacking her for monetizing the situation. So she defended herself by saying she was donating to Trans Lifeline and then sent her tweets to private.
The real winner here. Story. Yes. Yeah, it's nice to know that really, like, well, someone's made bank out this story.
Yeah. So, from what I can tell, there are a few basic camps when it comes to assigning blame here, if in fact Somerton is dead. The first camp is people who are blaming Harry Brewis, H-bomber guy. He hasn't publicly said anything about this, but you can see these people in his mentions on Twitter. Some people see him as a huge hypocrite because he himself is very woke. He raised all this money for mermaids. He talks about elevating marginalized voices. And to these critics, it looks like he or his fans effectively bullied James Somerson to suicide. Maybe the biggest name in this camp is a very confusing figure, Peter Coffin. Have you run into him before?
Is he a goth?
You would think so. He tweeted, if he is dead, H-bomb absolutely led the charge in killing him. This was ratioed to hell and back. But Peter Coffin, strange figure. When I first heard about him, he was a classic male feminist type. Very condescending, very woke, went by any, all, or they, them pronouns. Came out as non-binary because he said he was uncomfortable with his place in the gender hierarchy. Like, he's the kind of guy I can imagine lecturing a lesbian about genital preferences, like that kind of guy. I haven't paid much attention to him in recent years, but apparently he took somewhat of a pivot because he's now an example of the rare anti-woke they, them. He's also a Marxist-Leninist. He's apparently now very critical of identity politics, and he is one of a very small number of people who've been defending Somerton since the original plagiarism video. So back in December when this first started, he posted an essay about plagiarism that argues in short that rather than looking at plagiarism as an individual failing, we should look at it as the byproduct of economic pressures, something, something, late capitalism, Hail Marx, workers of the world unite, etc.
No, true. A good point. Well made.
So that's the first camp. H-bomber guy did it. The second camp are people who are less sympathetic to Somerton, who again might be dead. They think that H-bomber guy is the real victim here. So Helen, here's an example of that. Please read these tweets from an account called Bacchus Laurent.
To be clear, if James Somerton actually kills himself, I will just consider it more abusive and manipulative behavior by a fundamentally unrepentant narcissist, and all of my empathy and care will go towards H-bomber guy who did nothing wrong and is the real victim of such an action. And I really hope he doesn't, that's a point, because that would just be more shitty, destructive behavior. I hope he gets help and then learns how to help people in a real way. But suicide attempts, successful or not, aren't that. They're just an attempt to reframe himself as the victim and his victims as his persecutor.
That's right. Killing yourself is a way of reframing yourself as the victim.
Do you know what? It reminds me, once there was some person who had a massive hatred of me, and there was a bit when someone said something like, you should slap her. And she replied, she'd probably just get me done for assault or something. typical white woman. Yeah.
What a Karen, complaining to the police when someone assaults you.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at this point. Everyone pointing fingers at each other, and no one is sure if this guy is dead or not. On the H-bomber guy subreddit, Kat Lowe, so that's his producer, she said, quote, I've heard that James is currently alive and physically safe. I do not know what his current mental state is or what his next steps are. So my hope is that he is not dead and maybe he will change his name. I don't know, move to Florida, get a job at Disney, meet a man, and live an undisturbed life until someone recognizes him and we get a true crime series out of it.
That is a wild story. And I have to say, the one question that it leaves me with is, what was their real problem with him?
The one question you have isn't, is he dead?
Oh, I mean, yeah. Like, let's part that as number two. But like the one additional supplementary question that I have, because you know what I mean? When you read stories like this, and maybe I'm just single, cynical, having been on the internet for too long, you know, most people who get cancelled are kind of weird in some way, or people just don't like them. I don't know if you've ever watched The Traitors, but people who get voted out early are often people who don't make eye contact or are slightly a bit weird. Mm. And people make up all kinds of spurious reasons about why they think they're a traitor and they can't trust them and blah, 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 blah. But it's actually just a kind of ick, fundamentally. And you know, these stories can be that, or they can be professional jealousy, or they can be who's the most marginalized in the marginalized pile, or they can be Smurfette syndrome, right? Like there's only room to be one gay Disney YouTuber, and by God, it's going to be me.
And it also is just, I mean, Keffels said it. It's fun to be part of a mob. And I think there's probably a big element of that here. I mean, you have, how often is it that the internet can come together and say this person altogether, this person is bad, and have that not devolve into an argument about how he's good actually? Because Peter Coffin was basically the only one defending this guy. It was like a uniting moment. There's something sort of beautiful about it, except that it ends with someone possibly killing himself.
Yeah, I think I can totally see that. I don't know. It's odd, isn't it? I wonder if, I'm sure I definitely have that tendency, but I think now I over-index in the other direction, right? Which is I'm sort of weirdly sympathetic to like
villains,
child sex abuse image. No, I mean genuinely really bad people, because you think, God, how awful would it be to have done the absolute worst thing in the world and have absolutely no one defending you, be ostracized by everybody. And actually, some things are bad and you should be punished for them, and that's okay.
Right. But I mean, and John Ronson pointed this out in his book, you know, So You've Been Publicly Shamed. The internet never gives out the right amount of punishment. Mm. And what he is accused of is a misdemeanor. He is accused of plagiarizing, of ripping off articles and YouTube videos. That is a sin, but it is not a major sin. It is a bad thing to do, especially if you were the president of Harvard. But he's a semi-successful YouTuber. He didn't apparently harmed people, but he didn't hurt people, if that makes any sense.
There's a very good piece by Malcolm Gladwell in the New Yorker archive from like 10, 15 years ago about how he basically doesn't believe plagiarism is that big a deal, which is quite a brave thing to write, but it's certainly true. Like I've done screenwriting, and one of the things that people will insist always is that their screenplay has been ripped off, and or they don't want to kind of give up their ideas because they're worried people steal them. And it's a bit like there's no copyright in ideas, and it's the same thing that sometimes amateur writers will sort of say, I can't believe you've written about X subject, you know, that was my thing. And you have to be like, it's not the idea or even the beats of the idea. It's the whole execution that is the thing. You know, the bit in The Social Network when he says to the Winklevi, you know, if you were the inventor of Facebook, you'd have invented Facebook, right? It's not the idea. It's making the idea work.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. So, and certainly if you look at that last H Bomber Guy tweet about the kind of fact that this guy had basically read a, you know, listened to a bunch of podcasts and read an article. There is another word for that, which is aggregation.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens all over the internet.
Totally.
You can't tell me that, you know, a BuzzFeed or a HuffPost or an MSN article or, you know, some of the even lower reaches of, you know, tabloid websites that are probably now using AI to do that kind of stuff have higher standards than that. It's happening everywhere. And it's not right. It doesn't make it right, but it does mean that you can't kind of say that someone's basically Joseph Mengele for doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, especially about aggregation. It seems like blogs basically ran on that for years.
I think a lot of it comes down to the idea that people are making money that they don't deserve.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. It's all very well to be like, you know, we all live in this kind of glorious wonderland of shared ideas. But when you do that and then somebody extracts those ideas and monetizes them, it doesn't feel fraternal and collegiate anymore, right? It feels like being a parasite. And I wonder if that was the kind of the feeling that this guy wasn't one of them and he was kind of sucking everybody else's ideas out and not playing nice and not giving back and just becoming kind of famous off the backs of other people's work. That may have been the fundamental kind of sin that he committed.
Yeah. I mean, he did get a lot of shit wrong, but still the punishment for that should not typically be death.
The punishment for that is for Jesse to write a Substack about you over 9 episodes, yes. Right? That's like, yes. If you're Brett Weinstein, that's what you get. And that server should be available to everybody.
Yes. All right, Helen, any questions?
I would like to find out that he is alive. I think that would be a nice resolution, but I also fear for him if that's true, because
that would, you know, be worse.
Then people will feel that they've been hoodwinked, even though if they loudly declare that they didn't believe it anyway, they will now think that he's even more manipulative than before.
If he didn't kill himself and people find out that he didn't kill himself, he's gonna have to kill himself.
They will murder him. Yeah, right. Well, that was bleak. Thanks, thanks, Katie. And thank you for having me back. I hope before Jesse Sex Not Gender returns, I will come and visit you again with, I've got a pretty crazy story that I want to run past you. So hopefully I will see you again.
All right. We will see you in a few weeks. Thank you, Helen.
Bye.
This has been Blocked and Reported. Our show is produced, as always, with help from Tracing Woodgrains and Jessica, the 80s baby. I'm Katie Herzog, and I'll be back next week with a new guest host.